Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
I defaulted on that credit card, not understanding how the credit scoring and system works. It's very rare that you get to be, especially in finance, that you get to be a part of something that is personal. Once we're live, we want to engage directly with our customers. First couple times I brought those to the team, they listened, they ran with it, and it failed. The ability to attack a similar situation the next go around, it's transformational every time, because you know exactly what you did that let everybody else down on the last one, and you're not gonna do it again.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Failure is everything, right? So it's learning from it, whether they were at your fault or not at your fault, and figuring out what are the things I can put in my tool belt from this failure that are going to help me build the life I deserve and want.
Again, Peter, thank you again for coming on to the Phase Knowledge Podcast. I just got one question for you. Why float?
Yeah, without getting too much into the weeds on it, the reality is early on in my career, before my career, it's funny how things come full circle in life sometimes, and you don't realize it until it's happening. So you got to kind of trust the journey a little bit. But, I made a decision that was a decision all of my own with regards to a small credit card when I was 19 years old. I defaulted on that credit card, not understanding how the credit scoring and system works. And that created, near 10 years of financial hardship in terms of credit availability and credit worthiness. That credit score, that one poor decision, I don't blame anybody else for the decision, but it impacted the next near decade of my life. Fast forward a few years later, I was in my first sales job in the construction industry, and I needed to buy a truck. By that point, I was doing really well in my job. I had stable cash flow. I had healthy balances, a bank account that had been open for a long time, never overdrafted. And I went into a car dealership and got denied for a loan for a truck. The reason why I mentioned that and the other moment is that was my first taste of what is really sort of the backbone of float these days. You fast forward 20 years later. And now we've got a company that was largely inspired, at least my piece of it, by that experience, because that was my first taste of the fact where I was kind of puzzled. I was like, I don't get it. I have great cash flow. I've been making all the right decisions for the last several years. I can afford this truck all day long. The only thing saying I can't is this scoring metric. And that was kind of my first taste of what we very now publicly say is credit score is not always an indicator of affordability, right? And so I've always had this chip on my shoulder since then around access. The way in which our system and our credit system and everything is built today, it's kind of ironic that, the people that need a little bit of float, a little bit of access, a little bit of financial breathing room have the hardest time getting it for the most part. And the less and less you need it, the more and more it's readily becomes available. Today I'm grateful enough to say that I have an exceptional credit score. I pay off my bills every month in full. But if I need it, I can get all the credit I could ever need. But I don't need it. Meanwhile, there's people out there that are having to make small decisions that heavily impact their ability to make their rent on time or to get groceries when they need them. So fast forward through that, I spent the better part of the last 12, 15 years in finance, either on the B2B side or the consumer finance side. Was lucky enough, 3 years ago or so to get introduced to Larry Diamond, the founder of a buy now, pay later out there called Zip. We shared a passion for bringing a little bit of access to consumer bases that don't have it as easily. When I spent my time there, it didn't take me long to realize that while they're great at what they do, and same with the other buy now, pay laters out there, it's not rocket science. They're all kind of built on the exact same model, largely reliant on FICO scoring and credit scoring and bureau data. So if you have a poor, if it's deemed as a poor credit score or low credit score, and you want to get approved by them, you're going to get a couple hundred dollars on a short repayment period. It's not rocket science. That's far less risk per customer that they're taking to do that. But also in my time, I realized we have millions and millions of gig workers out there, podcast hosts, delivery drivers, creatives, artists, freelancers, that because they don't have reliant traditional employer and a consistent income, they don't qualify more often than not for credit-based models or loans. You've got expats, immigrants, new to credit, credit averse, people that have grown up in households with high interest revolving debt and just want no part of it, so they have no credit scoring. And then you've got over 100 million people in the US that have credit history, but it's what's deemed as subprime or deep subprime, below a 620 credit score. Those populations, which combined are about half of the US adult population, for one reason or another, don't qualify for traditional credit or a little bit of financial breathing room when they need it, including the majority of BNPL that's out there. So I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to map out a business model that knowingly and unknowingly had been building up in my mind for the better part of, the last 2 decades plus. But to bring a new solution to everybody, right, where you should no longer have to choose between taking your kids to a ball game, purchasing a reasonable flight, buying a car battery if you need it, whatever that is, you should never have to choose between that or something like rent being on time. And those sorts of things shouldn't create an unnecessary financial bottleneck or burden for people. So what I got the opportunity to really map out and launch was a consumer finance platform, which we call Float, which basically is there for anybody with a bank account that they can link. We don't look at credit scores or bureau data. It doesn't matter if you have a zero credit score or an 800 credit score, it won't help you or hurt you. And we're there to support people to get access to the things that they deserve or need access to every single day, whether it's tickets to a game, whether it's a car part, you name it. We're there to smooth out their cash flow and not create that unnecessary financial bottleneck. So that's why Float. It's very rare that you get to be, especially in finance, that you get to be a part of something that is personal. And to me, our motto behind the scenes is financial innovation does not have to mean financial exploitation. Right. And so we've brought a platform that we're getting ready to launch in the US, that is there for anybody that needs a little bit of breathing room, in the times that they want to access the things they deserve or need.
And I like how you started off with you was 19 years old and you got a credit card. You didn't know anything about the credit card. And then you start taking accountability for what happened when you was 19 years old. Fast forward to 20 years later, people don't recognize the epiphanies that come throughout that journey when you're understanding more about what you want to do, the business you want to have, and how you can actually go about having a business. It's the epiphanies that people don't see that makes a whole lot of difference. This failure that was at 19 helped you be more prepared to help those who are struggling with the same exact problem. But you understood that problem because you experienced it yourself. So here's the question. So as you experienced that at 19, and when you start to really get into flow and wanted to have the business for yourself and help the consumers be able to buy, what is it, buy now, pay later. the experience that you have really prepared you for that. How did you know, wait, this is what I've been doing this whole entire time, but I'm actually helping people with something that I struggle with. How do you know you was doing that?
Yeah, so you often don't during the journey, right? And it, but like what I would say is pay attention to the things that bring you the most emotional, financial, whatever it is that bring you the most strain, the most stress, because those are often the things that those moments that feel like unescapable, or why did I do this, or how am I going to get out of this, or I don't see an out, or when is this going to end? Those are the periods in your life that are probably not probably those are the periods in your life that are going to teach you the most if you're just paying attention and listening. Right, it's like it's a little bit of a cliche analogy, but I think it's perfect, right? Is nobody in shape, no muscles that exist, like muscles don't form in the periods of time that you're relaxed and watching TV or hanging out, right? They happen when they're stressed, right? Those little tears that end up growing them in the gym, right? And so it's like every really pure chapter in your life that creates a lot of stress, a lot of burden, if you're open to it, you're going to learn more from those periods, and you're going to have outputs, things that you take from those periods that are going to be unique tools to you and your belt that you're going to be able to apply down the road. You just don't know it yet. Right. And so, you know, did I know that I was going to get the opportunity to start a buy now, pay later company around this? No, not in the way in which it happened. But I also knew that like passion is not something that you can fake. And so like you have to pay attention to what you're passionate about. I am passionate about the fact that the majority of people are largely locked out of a little bit of breathing room because of a model that is years and years and years antiquated and outdated and does not serve the people that need it most. Right. And so at some point, an opportunity was going to present itself where that passion combined with the experience that I've built up and the learnings that I've taken along the way could be applied to do something, right? And so I didn't know, but I would say me personally, I'm a human being that has learned more from mistakes than anything else in my past. And the older and older I get, or as my mentor used to say, the more and more tenured you get. We don't get old, we get tenured. The things that I apply most to my daily life, personal, professional, growing a business, starting a business, right? So much of that comes from what in the moment felt like mistakes, felt like failures. And without those, I know one thing for sure. Without those, I wouldn't be here.
I like how you said, what did you say? You said that you didn't know. You didn't know. And the reason why I just asked that question that way is because a lot of leaders who are in a higher position role or they start their own business, they don't understand the journey that you're going through. But just because you have a business idea and you have a business plan and you have a business model doesn't mean that business is going to go as planned. And I give you a promise. I give you a prime example. Yesterday, in fact, I recognize because I did a podcast with he's a mango space here in Florida. And as I was doing a podcast, when we talking, but this is the second time I did it because the first time the microphone went dead and then we talked for a whole hour and the microphone just went dead in 3 minutes and 16 seconds. The conversation that we had the second time around, it was a lot better than the first time because of the report that we already have. But the information that I received the second time was so valuable. It gave me so many epiphanies. I'm like, wait, hold on. Like, this makes sense. Oh, wait, I'm doing the wrong thing. But it's the action that you're taking that helps you discover if it's the right thing, if it's the wrong thing. And then there was another podcast I was listening to. They say you have to listen to your consumers. You have to listen to your customers. You have a background in sales, which means that you have a lot of information to listen with your customers. How do you listen to your customers to provide the best value for them?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's always about listening. And sorry, Terrell, you're frozen on my screen. I'm not frozen on yours, am I?
I'm glad you just said that. One second. Thank you for letting me know. Oh, no, you're good. If I freeze again, please let me know. Let me see. I got to turn the camera on. Okay. Can you see me now?
Yep, we got you.
I'll scoot back just a little bit. Okay, thank you for letting me know.
Yeah, for sure. Do you want me to just answer the question from that point?
Yeah, you remember the question? Yes,
okay.
sir.
Yeah. Well, so listening to customers is everything, right? But also it's, you know, we're pre-launch. Technically, we don't have any customers yet if I'm talking about this business. But what I do have is an unmeasured amount of conversations, talking to gig workers, talking to people that would be ideal users, talking to Uber drivers when I'm on my way to the airport, asking them, hey, how would you think about something like this? How would you use it? Hey, like we're launching a product and like, this is the process that you'd have to go through to sign up for it. Is that something that would give you any pause, right? Constantly being open to feedback and inputs. Once we're live, we want to engage directly with our customers. You know, we want to be hearing from them. What do you love? What don't you love? What would make this easier for you? Most importantly above all, what don't you love? I'm not seeking validation. I know the idea is good, right? Because we've tested it. But that being said, like, it'll never become great unless we know where its shortcomings are, right? So like, we want to hear more than we want to hear what people love. We want to hear what people would change if they could, or what didn't work for them. We want to dig into every use case where it didn't work the way in which it was intended to. We're getting ready to launch our MVP, minimum viable product, right? Which is people can go out and use it in a very controlled environment before we do a national scale. And our instructions to the user group that we're going to allow to use it are break it. Right? Like go out and break this thing, right? Tell us everything that's wrong with it. Because those are the things that we want to get on right away. And then once we've got those things, those problems addressed or those concerns, it becomes the minimum lovable product, right? Because it's working. And then we evolve the things that people love. But like feedback is everything. Just because you don't have a business yet, or because you haven't launched it yet, doesn't mean you can't constantly be validating your concept or speaking to a stranger about how something could work. Would it impact them the way that you see it? Right. And just seeking that constant feedback. To me, that's going to be the biggest thing, is listening to customers and encouraging them to be brutally honest.
One thing that I respect about you is that you're explaining the process of a startup business, of a business that has like a foundation of what you want to do. But to confirm everything, you have to talk to your customers. You have to get a lot of feedback. I was in a program, Action Zone. They talked about, well, you got to go out and talk to your customers. Well, I'm like, well, who are my customers? At the time, I was going to University of South Florida, and everybody was like around maybe 18 to 25, give or take. And I'm asking them, so when was the last time you used social media? Because at the time it was around social media marketing. And it was like, well, before you walked up. I'm like, okay, when you got on social media, did you get on it for like entertaining, or did you go in there to have fun, or was it for business or something like of that nature? I was like, I'm just scrolling. Like, I'm bored. I'm just scrolling. But then as I'm receiving the real life feedback, it's helping me understand, one, I'm probably speaking to the wrong people. It's not the fact that the wrong people are in college. It's more so of they don't even see the value of social media. So now I got to pivot to a different direction, different conversation. Well, okay, so how do you find the customer that you want to speak with? Feedback can come from everybody. And there's a lot of, and what I recognize is what I learned as well, is it's a lot of things that people are not saying that makes a difference. Yep. When, as you was collecting the feedback and you was seeing what's working, what's not working, break it. If you break this off, but just do the best you can to break it so that way we can fix it. What's not being spoken about that makes a difference?
Yeah. I guess, let me make sure I understand the question. So in terms of what's not being spoken about that makes a difference, are you asking what are the things that we can't gain directly from feedback?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's just paying attention to reactions, getting things in front of the eyes of people that you know have different viewpoints on just about everything. Find the person that would argue you on just about everything, and show them what you're thinking of doing. Pay attention to those around you, how they're talking about other things that might be competitors. One analogy that always works really well for me is, like, if you're sitting at a dinner table with four people at a square table, right? You have four different views on the exact same table, right? And so from the chair I'm at looking at, what I see is an entirely different view from the chair that you're at looking at something, right? So understanding the fact that just because somebody has a totally different view doesn't mean it's wrong, that they're just at a different seat at the same table, right? And so, like, don't be over bullish on your own convictions, your own opinions. Others are actually just as important to pay attention to and how they look at things, because they're sitting at the same table, they just have a totally different view, right? And so don't be, I guess I would say, don't be closed off to views, insights, and inputs from people that you know don't look at things the same way that you do. In fact, I would say lean into finding as many people as you can that have a different view as you. But then also when you're just out in the world, right? Like, look, like, to me, sorry, I got off track a little bit there thinking about the question. I'm trying to keep it on topic, but I was about to ramble a bit.
No, go ahead.
No, it's, but not, like, for me,
I'm about to say, it's not rambling. Whatever thought that's coming, that's helping you answer the question, is helping you narrate the story. So that way, like, everything's coming together. And then, like, it's not rambling. I'm listening.
Yeah. Like, for me, the things that aren't talked about, that you should apply to if you're starting a business or something, are paying attention to those. It goes back to paying attention to those moments in your career, in your life, that felt hopeless or felt like most full of friction. I think about when I got into my first opportunity to begin leading or managing people, right? I learned more about leadership and management from the terrible bosses that I had than I did about the great ones that are still, you know, world-class mentors today. Because paying attention to what not to do is equally important to trying to replicate what to do, right? I think it's about, what are the things that create loyalty for you, right? Like, if somebody interacts with you in a certain way, if somebody does something that's uncommon but appreciated, and you get a warmth from it, you get a feel from it, a reaction to it, right? Taking notes of those things that make you feel good, make you feel warm, but also make you feel stressed, make you feel concerned, right? Those, you can take those feelings and those interactions that you experience in everyday life and work and relationships at home, and you can apply them to whatever the product, service, thing is that you're trying to bring on. Like, how do we create, replicate that feeling? For us, it's not just about consumer feedback on product validation and testing. It's also applying the things, whether it's an onboarding process, a customer service response time, feedback from a survey, right? What are the experiences that I've gone through, that my team has gone through in life currently and leading up to this, that created those feelings of, like, warmth, seamlessness? What are those experiences that created the feeling of, like, friction, things like that? And how do we avoid or make those our own and apply them to our product? So for me, it's not just about verbal feedback and direct feedback. It's about thinking about the things that make people feel good, the things that make people feel bad, the things that are necessary, the things that are unnecessary, right? And how do you take those feelings or experiences and apply them to whatever it is that you're doing? And I think that is not just on the product side, but it's also, to have a great product and a great company, you have to have a great team that believes into it and buys into it, right? And so it's constantly validating feedback from my team, and constantly giving them that, and making sure that I can avoid those unnecessary moments of friction that are and there are necessary moments of friction, believe me. To create that buy-in and that loyalty and that belief in the vision to deliver it. Because it's just as much internal as it is external when it comes to delivering a good business.
And I definitely agree. You mentioned in the beginning, the reason why the company Float came about was that you was 19 years old and you got a credit card and you didn't recognize that one mistake will hinder you for a decade. As I'm listening to you and as I was doing research on you and learning more about your journey, everything that you've been through, correct me if I'm wrong, in 2010. Okay. I'm still good.
Yep.
Okay. In 2010, you got the Rookie of the Year award. Was that the right time frame?
Yep.
Okay.
That was in my first sales job. I believe that was RRSA Corp.
Okay. Okay. So you got the Rookie of the Year in 2010 in your first sales job. And then as you continue to grow, develop, and establish yourself, you're becoming more confident in everything that you're doing. I looked up the word confident the other day and it said to be certain of a thing. And it seems like that you are certain of sales. So when it comes to flow and really getting the feedback and customer feedback to really understand how to position your product so people can really enjoy it and don't break it, so y'all can update it and change it and make it user friendly. What is the biggest lesson that you learned while understanding? Well, it starts here, but it's not just because of me. It's because of the people that's around me that's making the difference.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, what's funny is I was never certain of sales. I was motivated and hungry, and I was okay with the fact that going after your goals, you have to be, somebody once said to me that if you're to truly go after your goal, you have to be okay with Murphy's Law entering your home every day, meaning that what can go wrong will go wrong, right? The deals that you think are done are never done. I joke that I have a calloused soul from a career in sales, because nothing's ever done and final until it's signed and live, right? My team around me it drives them nuts sometimes, because I don't get excited about things when it comes to like deals or partnerships. I mean, I'm passionate about them, but I don't celebrate until they are done, because what can go wrong usually will go wrong, especially in entrepreneurship. But you're only as strong as the people around you. More often than not, some of the things I learned early on in sales, but it's so applicable everywhere now that I've expanded out of sales and I interact for the last several years with legal, with operations, with engineering, with product, with marketing, right?
Don't forget finance.
Don't forget finance. I don't forget finance. So many people try to hire themselves, right? They try to hire the same work ethic. They try to hire the same people that they get along great with. And while that's important, culture is incredibly important. I truly believe that for a team to be great, everybody has to play a different role. One of the biggest, I would say, like, moments in my management and leadership career was at Capital One. I had a team that was so diverse thinking, right? And I used to go out for a run or a bike ride. Like, to me, my mornings are sacred. That's, for me, that's my church. In the summer, I'm getting out on a bike ride during the sunrise, sitting on the deck watching the sunrise. That's where I get some meditation. That's where I plan what's in my cup emotionally for the day. That's my time that nobody can bother me, because they're all still sleeping for the most part. Right. But I used to in these times, you want to show yourself, you want to prove yourself as a manager, as a leader, right? And so I would try and come up with like the next big aha idea for the team. And like, this is the direction that we're going. It's going to be great. The first couple times I brought those to the team, they listened, they ran with it, and it failed, right? Then what I realized is, I don't get it. Like, this is a great bet. Like, this is a great idea. This is a great concept, whatever it is. I realized the only thing missing is I'm not absolutely sure that I have buy-in from everybody at that table on what it is, right? And so what I focused on then is, I should still have the ideas. Everybody should, in fact, and not be afraid to bring them. But I want a team around me of people where I can take what I think is the next great idea and throw it out onto the table, and they have no problem chewing it up, breaking it, spitting it apart, saying what they like. And what'll happen, you'll be shocked to see, is 9 times out of 10, you'll leave that room with an entirely different idea, right? More often than not, it is not the idea you brought in. But what you also have is complete alignment. right? And when you have complete alignment of a group that brings different strengths, what you can do in a short period of time is unbelievable, because everybody's moving in the same direction, right? And people aren't afraid to bring feedback. The other thing with the team is feedback is a two-way street, right? At the end of the day, I steer the ship, but that doesn't mean they don't get to give feedback to me or input, right? If I have the right to coach and manage, they have the right to provide feedback right back. And if you don't create an environment where people feel comfortable doing that, you're going to fail. So to me, it's like, there's nothing more important than the people around you. And honestly, hire your weaknesses. Everybody on my team has strengths and in areas that they're so much stronger than me. Right. So like, think about your gaps as a leader, as a manager, as a peer, right? And fill those by bringing in people that are better than you at those, and creating an environment where they're not afraid to show it in a constructive way.
So I like how you say you have an idea and you throw it on the table, and then your team gives you feedback on, you know, what can be improved, what's working, what's not working. That same approach that you took with your customers, you're taking that same approach for your team. So not only does your customers feel included, your team is feeling included because you're constantly seeking feedback. You're constantly seeking like the knowing, understanding more about what your team has to offer, team or customer has to offer. When I was in the Marine Corps, we all focused on the team aspect of it. That was like, well, it doesn't matter what you look like here in boot camp. Everyone is green, which means everyone is the same. Everyone is a team. So everyone matters. And you are making your customer feel matter, feel special, and you're making your team feel special. And when they give you input, everything just magically happens.
It's amazing how that works. It's, I've been, our fire departments around here for the most part are volunteer. And I've been on the fire department here for a few years now. And, in fact, it's another story for another day, but I actually, my intention was to be a career firefighter when I moved out to Colorado. I accidentally got into sales. But fast forward, it's wild, but I've been volunteering on the fire department for about 5 years. And one of the things, I was with a department for a little while called Fairmount. And one of the things that they were great at was after action debriefs, right? And that was no egos, no seniority, no titles, no ranks. That was a sit in a circle afterwards and point out what everybody else did wrong first and foremost, right? And then once we get through that, like, you're a junior firefighter, you can tell the captain what they did wrong, what was confusing. Right. And you learn from that. And then you focus on, all right, this is how I'm feeling about things. This is how that impacted me. But what was amazing is fast forward to the next call that you get pulled out on in a similar situation. Because of that feedback, because everybody checks their egos at the door and debriefs with brutal honesty and good intention, right? The ability to attack a similar situation the next go around, it's transformational every time, because you know exactly what you did that let everybody else down on the last one, and you're not going to do it again. So I can relate to that. Like, check your ego. It's almost like check your ego at the door. What you've done before now doesn't matter, right? Be open to feedback and criticism, and people that might actually bring something that they're strong at that you're not. And lean into that. Don't be afraid of that.
And that's power. And that's the aspect of leadership that you develop from the age of 19, because the age of 19, you start to understand, well, maybe this was a mistake. But as you get older, the mistake turned into something where you can help other people with the same exact problem that you experienced. So what we're gonna do, we're gonna go off script. And so now we got a special moment in this call. I forgot the name of it, but essentially you're the professional. I mean, you're the pro, and I'm coming to you as a newbie. And I come to you and say, Peter, I want to get into the pay. What is pay now? Pay. Hold on.
Buy now, pay later.
Yep. Buy now, pay later. Buy now, pay later. And I have no idea what to do. I've never even heard of it before. What are three steps that you would give a newbie getting to the industry of buy now, pay later?
Yeah, for a newbie, it's a off script, and this is a great time actually for that sort of question, especially given what I would call the macroeconomic environment that newbies are facing right now, which is trying to get in the door, right? So, for me, it's look around, pay attention to what others are doing, and do something different, right? As basic as people are going mad today, just like they're sitting on LinkedIn for 5 hours and they're just clicking apply, 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 apply to all the companies that they want to be in, right? And then their name's just getting thrown into a bucket, same as every other name going into that bucket. Take the extra step, right? Like find the CEO of that company, right? Write them a letter personally, right? On LinkedIn, create a video recording, right? Be blunt, don't be fake. I love it. I love it when it's like, I'm not here to waste your time. This is why I'm making this extra effort, right? Me personally, I can't speak to everybody, but people that go the extra mile and track me down are getting an interview, right? Because it's different and that's what I want, right? So I would say make yourself different. And the best way you can do that is just pay attention to what everybody else is doing and do something different. That being said, lean into what your unique superpowers are, right? Like you have to know what your strengths are, right? For me, one of my strengths has always been empathy in a way that I feel that I have a unique ability to find common ground with just about anybody. We could have totally different political beliefs, we could have totally different work beliefs, it doesn't matter. Like I can find common ground and therefore have real conversation. Right? Like find out what your strengths are and lean into those. Because if you're lucky enough to get an interview, you're now going to get a first date to decide if you're going to get married or not. Right. And that's like make yourself memorable. And the only way you do that is through like authenticity and knowing and like self-awareness, like bringing your own strengths. The other thing is you have to have, especially from my past, which was sales go-to-market partnerships, you have to be okay with the fact that what can go wrong will go wrong, right? And you have to be willing to deal with rejection. And you have to show that you're willing to lean in to the hard parts, not the easy parts. The amount of people that I've heard say that they want to start a career in sales because they like people and they can have conversations. And they like the social aspect of it. I'm like, yeah, who doesn't, right? The reason 90% of people fail in sales is not because they can't have a good conversation or they don't like entertaining people or having or the social aspect. It's to get to the place where you have one good conversation, you get to entertain one client or do anything. You had to go through countless, likely hundreds of rejections, right? And most people say they're okay with it. But they really can't like take the constant just deflation and rejection that's required to get that one opportunity. Right. So whether it's in sales trying to get that meeting or that deal, or whether it's out in the market trying to just to get seen or get that interview, you have to be okay with going through more rejection than anybody else and then differentiating yourself. People quit before they get there, and what they don't realize is the only thing that's for certain when you quit is it's not going to happen. Right. And then I would say self-education, right? I don't have a college degree, right? I got into sales. I found something that I thought was a really interesting market in payments. Right. And so I studied that. Right. And so that way, when I could come to the table, I showed that oh, this guy's done their homework. Right. So show that you're different. Show that you can lean into the harder moments more so than you can thrive in the easy moments, right? And then yeah, just really lean into your unique strengths, but do something different. At the end of the day, just be different.
So to
And your
recap, oh my bad.
and your fit oh no, and your failures are going to be the thing that make you the most different if you learn from them.
If you learn from
If you learn from them.
So
I had plenty I had to do a few times.
to recap, be different, Number two, lean into the hard moments instead of the easy ones. And then number three, you say self-awareness. You said self-awareness, right?
Yeah, lean into the hard moments instead of the soft ones. Be different and know what your superpower is. Know what your strength is, and know what it's not. Don't try and fake it.
Because people would know. People would know.
People know.
So I'm in the process of building my business, and I had two employees at most, but now I have a team right now. But understanding the process of getting everything set up, I learned this from the 10X movement with Grant Cardone, and that was like, well, leadership is making other people's success easy. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Now I'm learning how to create checklists. I'm learning how to create process. I'm learning how to create steps. And it's a sequence of the order, what is called the order operation that has to be done. But then as it's done, you follow the checklist and do the things that needs to be done. I wasn't always great in sales. In fact, I'm still learning how to be good at sales. Nonetheless, you never get to the point where you've made it. You get to a point where you're always discovering, learning, growing. And you mentioned something about mentors. Mentors are critical for your success. When you had your first mentor, how did that change your life?
Completely. I mean, he my first mentor, I didn't even know was my first mentor, right? And it's you know what I said, it's I was fortunate enough when I was, you know, around the same time that I wrecked my credit, to have met a couple of people named Marion and Gratian, who are brothers, and one of them is a co-founder of mine on a side project we've been working on for a few years. And like I didn't even know at the time that I was meeting two people that were going to have one of the most positive impacts on my life of anybody I've ever met, right? But they taught me, you know, through surrounding myself with them, I was drawn to them. They were good people that seemed to be magnetic to people around them, and seemed to be incredibly authentic and like giving. They put the person before the dollar at all times, right? And so I like others, was just drawn to them. They saw something in me where they gave extra time, whether it was just inviting me out with them. They're 10 years older than me, right? So I'm like hanging out with a crew of guys that really normally wouldn't give me the time of day at that time. And I'm learning life lessons. I'm learning their experiences of what they went through. They were refugees that are now both highly successful entrepreneurs. And like, you know, they have helped shape my character over the years. It's not all business, right? They've been mentors to me as a person, you know, whether it's how I treat my relationships, my marriage, my friendships. They taught me that like, you should never be able to count your really close friends on more than one, maybe two hands, right? And right, so like I have thousands, maybe not thousands, I have dozens and dozens of acquaintances, right? I have very few friends, right? And those are people that I can go to for anything, right? But then also, you know, on the career side, you know, like when you get time to have a genuine conversation with somebody that you admire, like lean into it. You know, the person who hired me at Capital One was a guy named Andy Stearns. He's now the head of sales over at CoStar Group, homes.com. And shout out to Andy. But it's you know, when I was applying for that role, I went and met him at a brewery that they were hosting basically like a roadshow at for this new business they were getting ready to launch within Capital One. And when I recognized him off of LinkedIn, I went over and sat with him at a table instead of the recruiting manager that had like 30 people around him. And I said, excuse me, sir, are you Andy? My name's Peter. You know, I just wanted to get my resume in front of you. I know that you're the person starting this business, and just let you know that when you open up, when you start doing go-to-market and you open up the Denver market, like I'd like a shot at this. And what I thought would be a 5-minute conversation, maybe, and giving my resume to the big dog, turned into be about an hour plus and a couple of beers on sales culture and philosophy, philosophy, creating an environment where people feel accountable to something more than just their assigned metrics, right? Where failure is not an option because they're a part of it, right? And so at the end of that conversation, I said, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to come work for you. And, but fast forward now, you know, that was 2016, 2017. It's now 2025. I talked to him regularly. He was in Denver a few weeks ago. We went out and got dinner and talked, chatted about life, and like, stay close to the people that you see doing things right and ask for their input. If you see a window to sit with them and chat with them, like, do it. Because those people will, some of those people will go on to become mentors that shape your life personally and or professionally. So I've been lucky enough to build up, you know, a tight group of friends slash mentors, and then a couple of business advisors as well, that like, I'm brutally honest with, I seek help, I seek feedback. I'm not there for validation on you're doing great, keep it up. Right. And they'll be brutally honest with you if they're the right people. That's how you know you might have a mentor on your hand, is they'll tell you what you don't want to hear. Last thing on that, you know, I was going through a tough period when I first moved out to Denver, and still had poor credit. I couldn't get any of the apartments I wanted at the time, even though I could afford them. I was trying to figure out what my next move was, felt in a hole. And I remember griping about it to Marion one day, and his exact words were, Petey, the worst day that you ever experience will be better than the best day somebody else experiences. Right. And that's like stuck with me forever. It was a reality check of like, quit feeling sorry for yourself. Like, accept the situation that you're in at your fault or not at your fault. It is what it is. Right. But focus on getting out of it, because you actually have an opportunity to.
And you share with me the importance of the mentor and really being different from everybody else. There's 30 people talking to the recruiters, but yet there's no one talking to the man who make the decisions. And so you actually practice what you preach instead of preaching what you don't practice. And I respect that about you. So before we come to the end, I have something about floats. It was the mental aspect of it, float. Yeah. I think that was it. But so I have one last segment. It's called Best for Last, and it's where I ask you four questions and you answer within the next 30 seconds.
Let's do it.
All righty. So first question, what are you grateful for?
Oh man. I immediately go to my wife, you know, and that's to have somebody that's got your back no matter what, it is the thing that I'm most grateful for day in, day out. Float could be the greatest idea in the world, and it could be an incredible company. But again, entrepreneurship and business, it's like, to chase your dreams, you got to invite Murphy's Law. And so anything and everything could go wrong. But I have exceptional friends, and I have a wife that has stood by me through everything. She's encouraged me to take the riskier decisions, right? Knowing that we're okay with the worst case scenario. Because if you can't be okay with the worst case scenario, then don't go for it, right? So my wife, my friends.
That is powerful. I shout out to my wife as well, because I'm married as well. So shout out to my wife as well, because that support system. Oh man.
Yeah, Brianna Dean, hands down the thing I'm most grateful for.
Yes. And shout out to Shana. That's my wife's name. Question number two: do you have any regrets?
Yeah, for sure. I don't have any regrets in terms of the things that people might think about. I don't regret making the decision to tank my credit. There's a lot of people out there that tanked their credit, you know, through life events and things, not at their own fault. Mine was my own fault. Right. So I don't have a lot of regrets career-wise. But I look back on moments like, if you're not reflecting, then you're not doing it right, I think. And there's interactions with people. There's guys in my life that, you know, I didn't do a great enough job keeping in touch with, you know, and so I look back and I there's outcomes that I, along the way, you know, you don't get the chance, you learn from them, but I regret the outcome in the first place. But I do everything I can to try and prevent future outcomes or replicating the things that might give me regrets.
That came from a true leader who took a lot of accountability for himself. Question number three, what is your biggest lesson that you've learned while being the owner of Float?
Oh man, ask for help. Right. It's tough if you're always trying to play the game of make your board members or your investors happy, and then protect the people below you, or not everything that you hear from above can go, you know, to the people that work for you, and not everything that you hear from down low can go up. So you can very much find yourself in a very isolated, lonely situation and creating your own echo chamber. That's what advisors are for. That's what mentors are for. So find people who you trust, even if they think differently, and ask for help.
Yeah, that's powerful. That is powerful. Yeah, that's important. That's important. And then last question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Oh man, it means everything. I love the basis of this podcast and what you're doing, Terrell, because for me, every single one of my greatest strengths or everything that I look at has oftentimes, more often than not on my journey, come from making the wrong decision early on, or not getting to the outcome that I thought would come. Nothing comes easy. There's a quote that I love by a person named Earl Nightingale from a long time ago. But the quote is, "We are all self-made, but only those who like where they're at choose to admit it." Right. And so while we don't all have the same starting line, we don't all have the same circumstances, advantages, that is true. But the ultimate outcome, where we go, how we choose to fill our cup and focus our energy every day, right? That is entirely up to us. Right. And how we choose to get to where we know we can get to, regardless. And so to me, like, failure is everything, right? So it's learning from it, whether they were at your fault or not at your fault, and figuring out what are the things I can put in my tool belt from this failure that are going to help me build the life I deserve and want.
Wow, Peter, man, so, you are incredible. I will definitely learn a lot from this conversation. How can people learn more about Float? How can learn more about Peter? How can people potentially become mentees and or work on your team? Or how can you find more mentors to learn and to you so you can learn more about them?
Yeah, absolutely. Reach out to me directly. Peter.m@ovanti.com, OVANTI. Soon to be in the new year, peter.m@float.com. Float is FLOTE. Also reach out to me, Peter Maher on LinkedIn. Go to Get Float on any social channel. But yeah, reach out to me. If you're looking to crack into an industry, right? If you don't have a college degree and you're doubting your ability to get into business or whatever path you want to go down, you want to learn about our industry, business or personal, I'll get back to you. So please reach out.
Peter, again, thank you for coming on to the Phase Knowledge Podcast. What was your biggest takeaway while being on a podcast?
Yeah, this is one of the few platforms that I've been on so far where you just get to have real authentic conversation around learning from mistakes. You know, the most knowledge and wisdom you're going to get in your life is from failures, if you're open to learning from them. Right. So I just appreciate the platform. I think there's more people out there than not that think they're alone or think that they're in a smaller audience than they actually are. And platforms like this show them that you may feel like you're in a tough spot or like you've made the wrong decision or failed at something. But the reality is, if you learn from it, that might be the catalyst towards the greater version of you that's out there. Right. And so I appreciate what you're doing. My experience has been exceptional coming onto this platform. And it's one of the few where you just get to have authentic, genuine, growth-based conversations around real life experience.
Man, I appreciate that. And the next question is, for someone who's hesitant to come onto the Phase Knowledge Podcast, what is one piece of advice that you can give them?
Yeah, I would say if the reason that you're hesitant is because you don't want to talk about your failures openly, then I think you should. That's probably how you know you should lean into it, right? So I would say go for it and be vulnerable. Throw them out there because, you know, just like the receiving end of this podcast, right? Like the more people can talk about the decisions that they made that maybe were failures in the time, but that you've learned from it and how you've learned from it, the more we'll all benefit. So you're doing a disservice if you're not willing to get on a platform and talk about what you've learned from failures, because it helps others.